And with that, shall we jump into today's interview? Again, we have with us Dr. Becky Meyer. She is the superintendent of schools for Lake Pendre School District. She's got a super busy schedule. So, Becky, thank you for making it into the studio this morning.
Well, thanks for the invite.
And I thought we'd start out with the fact that although you were in the administration several years back, you were a principal at Sandpoint High School, you've obviously had many years in the school district. You've just finished off your first half of a school year as superintendent of school. So tell us how it's going.
Well, in a nutshell, it's going wonderful. It's great to be back home again. I just feel like I've sort of fit back in and didn't realize I'd been gone for 6 years. There are some new faces, new people moved into the community, obviously different issues we're facing, but the great, you know, still the same great school district that I worked in before, and I'm just really happy to be back home again.
Well, has anything unexpected popped up this first half year? You're pretty well into the rhythms of, you know, the school year plus this particular district, but just anything unexpected happened as superintendent?
I don't think anything unexpected. I think things that I was probably used to dealing with my last superintendent job. There's always questions. School safety is forefront of parents' mind. So really thinking about how we're addressing that with the district safety task force team. I did an interview with you once before, but we, you know, started on July 5th, and on July 11th, we began a district safety task force team, met weekly and then biweekly, and then now we're meeting monthly. We have addressed a lot of safety issues. So safety has come up, questions on curriculum and just, you know, what we have, what we show, what we're doing, questions about that from some patrons and parents. So really diving in, and I've done some reading of our curriculum and looking at that with some patron groups. We're in the middle of a science adoption for curriculum, so there's lots of questions, excitement about that. If people are following our Instagram or Facebook, they'll see that the kids are dissecting squid, we had a kid tell their parent, "I can't miss today. We're going to dissect squids." I mean, students love that hands-on, just love it. And then just really looking at unfinished learning. I know we're past the COVID now, but there really is some unfinished learning gaps that students have, because there was, you know, we had to fragment for a while and have at home try to do online learning. And then when we did come back, we had to increase social distancing. It just isn't the same learning environment that it was pre-COVID. For what's our new normal now, and how do we interact with the students, with the parents, what are the expectations for attendance? And so there's just a new kind of parameters that we're working through and all trying to figure out together.
Mm-hmm. So as pertains to COVID, I've read a few stories that said kids were actually thrown back because they didn't have that classroom experience during those couple years. Is that a big factor with the schools right now?
Absolutely. You'll see in our draft first iteration of our 5-year strategic plan that I know you're going to ask about a little bit later, that student connection, really improving student connection, is one of our very top priorities. And that really has to do with post-COVID. There, you know, people had isolationism. People were kind of on their own track. They had to, you know, learn. We were still here as a school district. We're still here as teachers to help. But it did fragment people's learning. Some students really acclimate to online learning and they could keep going. Some excelled, and others it was real struggle. So for us as a school district, how do we meet each and every student's need and make up for some of those gaps that they may have had of instruction? I mean, we're talking from kindergartners on up to our seniors that graduated. So
that's a full spectrum of student needs. How are just basically a few examples of how you might be helping students find those connections? And it's social, too. Yeah. It's not just the learning aspect, but the social. Just an example of maybe how that connectivity enhances the learning experience.
Well, that's a great question, Susie, because if you'll look at our 5-year strategic plan, the draft, the student improving student connections, out of all of the 994 people who did the survey, one of the top things you'll get, we'll get into it, but addressing facilities actually end up being the number one. And which, if you've been in the district for a long time, back all the way to 1993 that I've worked in the district, it really is something we need to address as a community. But second is improving student connection. And to your point, there is academic connection, social connection, and then there's the well-being of the student. And again, when there was the COVID, there was some isolation going on, and they've done some research. It really did fragment kids away from their social group, the typical where you see your friends and the socializing. It was a lot different than obviously during the COVID. So it didn't only affect the academics for students, the social networking for students, their participation in normal activities, you know, the graduation in the parking lot. I mean, there was just, you can see that cohesion needs to be rebuilt again. And some of the social norms that we have attending every day, things that we had as a district, they're not the expectation anymore post-COVID. So we're trying to figure out that and find the place that we can help students and families together.
When you're talking about that, immediately I started thinking about kids playing games together. Mm-hmm. So in the younger grades, you could just enhance that with some more, you know, non-competitive games intentionally to kind of get them to know each other again and how to be in a group again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, with your Waldorf experience, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That social interaction is so important as our students are growing up. Mm-hmm. So. Yes, definitely.
Well, let's go ahead and roll into the strategic plan, because you actually just talked about one of the major goals. Now, the plan, I think the draft was just released.
Yep.
Yeah. And is it available now on the website?
It was sent out into the Loop last night. So the Loop is right in there on the very front webpage. So if you click on the Loop, it's right under my little intro paragraph. It's linked in there as a PDF.
It's right at the top of the Loop. So if you go to the Loop, you'll be able to see the PDF and download it if you want it. And it's a simple document. Strategic plans usually are simple because they articulate some major goals that the organization, in this case school district, is going to undertake. You already mentioned one of those major goals is address facilities. I'm going to rattle off the others right now. Improve student connection is the second. The third major goal is to retain quality staff. And the fourth major goal is to foster community connection. And I'd like to come back and talk a bit about each of these. But first, tell us about the process of developing this, because there was a lot of community input that you sought for this.
So when I was hired, one of the things the board said is we did not renew our strategic plan. We want to start with a new superintendent, clean slate. They just thought it was the perfect timing. Let's create a whole new five-year plan together. We have new community members, new staff, new students. What do we want to create for the future of this district? So that was one of my very first tasks, was to do that. I did a survey right off the bat, and then we did community input forums. So I had Clark Fork, Sandpoint, and Sagal, and we had community input forums for people who wanted to speak in person, station set up with information. The survey stayed open for a long time. We actually extended it all the way to parent teacher conferences in November so we could extend the amount. I really wanted to be able to get 2,000 input. We have 38, just over 3,800 students. And I was really shooting for that 2,000. We have 994, and people say I should be very happy with that amount if you're looking at normal surveys. So they said that's a good response rate. After we did all of that input in the surveys and the in-person, then we went in what I call synthesize, we funneled it, I call funneling activities, or you can call it synthesizing, and we started with our K-12 admin team. Those are all the principals, assistant principals, ADs in the district. I read all feedback, every single word, and then we funneled, what are the themes? So we had huge, six whiteboards, and we're putting up the themes, and then you're marking. Anybody who's done a qualitative dissertation would be able to empathize with this and get all the themes out. What are some real strong ones? So we synthesized. Then the operations team looked at it. That's all the directors in the district office team. Then we decided, we kind of had a rough outline of what those main themes were that the community, parents, staff, students are giving back to us. Then we said, let's do another community input. Let's have them give us some feedback on this first iteration. So we had it on January 12th at the district office. We had another input. Several people showed up, and we, again, further funneled it, added comments, questions, how do we clarify this? So it's just been really taking form ever since I got started here. Then people have also sent me emails as well. And then after that, I had a certified think tank look at it just last night. Last Friday, I had a classified district input team from a classified perspective, representatives from all district, from all schools, and job classifications. So last night, finished it about 5. I stayed, got it all done, and got it right into the loop so that Kristen Hawkins could get that out to our parents and patrons.
Mm-hmm. And I got it last night.
Thank you. Thank you for opening it and looking at it, Chris.
Well, let's talk about each of the four goals. The first goal that the strategic plan mentions is to address facilities. And, of course, no secret there. We have some buildings that are very aged, and actually some of them could probably be renovated. Some of them need to be replaced. But top of the list under address facilities is increased school safety. So tell us a little bit more about what you envision there.
Well, we did start, like I said, the District Safety Task Force team right when I came and started interviewing and talking to people. That was a very strong need. So we started that task force, law enforcement, emergency management, lots of first responders. I have an elementary and a secondary administrator on there, and then several district folks, facilities director, that are helping with that. We meet a lot. We did a short-term, long, mid-range, and long-term priorities. We did a list, got community feedback with that. All the parents were able to give their opinion in a survey, and we did those priorities, ran it by the school board, and we started right away. I'm also sitting on the LEPC, which is the Local Emergency Management Planning Commission, and shared with them everything we've got done, and just people are so excited to see really in a short time what this task force has been able to do. We also have had lots of support. We have a local company in Priest River that gave us a great deal on our controlled access, which is now at all secondary schools, where you come up, if you're a staff person, you know, run your badge and put it in, you can click in, and if you're visiting, you push the button. They have a camera, they can see you, let people in. Very smooth. That just got in 2 weeks ago. We just got in the 4 secondary schools, and now we're working on the outlying schools. Hope, Northside, Segal, mm-hmm. are next ones on the list. We also have a Raptor system, so we're scanning people's IDs so that people that come into the building are checked. That's just a new system that we got also based on the priorities from this District Safety Task Force team. And lots of looking at external variables that would help keep the safety externally around the outside. But I want to reiterate, I did this last time we were here, all of those are great steps, but the number one thing with safety is proactive, and it goes into our second thing on this priority list, is student connections. Mm-hmm. You'll see on there, there's a One Trusted Adult initiative. And that really means, you know, research proves if students have somebody they feel they trust, an adult at the school, could be the custodian, it could be a favorite teacher, a counselor, a parapro, admin assistant, anyone, that they feel like they have somebody to talk to, share their problems, have some advice, be able to help them through some of the obstacles. And, you know, growing up is hard, and there's lots of things to deal with. If they feel like they have somebody, there's research to show that that will help keep kids engaged, connected, and, you know, healthy.
Just real quick on that idea, which I think is superior, is a great idea and essential, is how do you foster those connections? Because there are so many children in the district. So does the teacher, the first person that may be identified that a student needs to be held differently or given support?
Well, teachers are obviously, especially starting in elementary, they have those students all day long in their classroom. They know lots about them. As you get older, you have 6 or 7 teachers or 8 teachers. And that, we go from a single teacher really getting involved in connecting with kids into What are you involved in? What else? How else can we make connections, not only with their peers, but with the staff? So what sort of clubs, activities, athletics, what are they involved in? And teachers will really, in this community, I have told you all these years, they step up and say, what are kids involved in? Dalton started an e-group. Like, so they have an e-video game club. I'm getting their name wrong, and he's probably not like, Becky, you know what this is. But they go in, they have donations from people that have given them Ting and different things, and they go in, they play video games, they create video games, and they have chess club, they have, you know, any sort of sport, theater, having art club, a human rights task force, things that they come together and they have a common purpose. They're starting a, they have a prayer club. I mean, any sort of club that have kids get around a common purpose and create some, empathy with other people and likeness and feeling included. And that's super important for us growing up. But I especially think it's important post-COVID that we recreate those connections for our students.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So also under improving student connection, you have improved academic engagement, which is more specific about, you know, the learning things here. And there's a several things under that. Increased career technical education opportunities, the CTE opportunities, increase elective opportunities, flexibility in student schedules, demonstrate relevance through internships, field work, job shadows. But I notice, and I'm a layman here, okay, not an educator, that there isn't like a line that says increase, you know, student testing performance. So address that a little bit. You know, we want to improve academic engagement, but also we want to help the kids excel.
Right. And it's interesting you say that, Chris, because that's been one of the things I've been thinking about as this all came to fruition and now as we're funneling and really gathering all this information. It's ironic. Almost every strategic plan you've ever seen, increase student achievement, increase student achievement. Here are our SMART goals. We're going to go from this percent on the IRI for reading. We're going to go from this percent for math for the ISATs, and we're going to increase, you know, and that's always what it looks at. I really took the community, parents, and students. I did not insert any of my own thoughts into this. I'm really wanting to take what does the community, the current community, want for this school district in the next 5 years. And this is what came out. Now, inherent, in my opinion, inherent in all of these that you see here, Chris, that you have in front of you, the test scores, the student achievement, the student learning will inherently happen from all of these things being in place. So if we make sure we have school safety and students and staff feel safe to be at school, if we make sure that the next thing under that is safe buildings, healthy buildings, buildings I want to be at, great atmosphere buildings. We need to address a few of them in our district. If that's good, the next one, student connections. If students are coming, they're connecting with their peers, they're really academically engaging back into the curriculum again, into what they need to learn. They're seeing, I have a gap here or there. My teachers are helping me fill those in so I can be ready for graduation. If I'm creating internships, job shadows, figuring out ways that they have hands-on classes that really connect them to school, and you can see student attendance is under that. I want to be here. I intrinsically, you see on their intrinsic motivation to be at school, they have the reasons that they want to be there. They don't want to miss school. And then the next one is really to create retaining quality staff and then communication and connection with the community. I think inherently what's going to be the outcome from this being put into place is that we are still going to have rigor, high expectations, and student outcomes will excel.
So it sounds like what you're saying is students want to learn. It's natural to want to know new things and to be involved. Just remove the barriers.
Remove the barriers.
And add support.
Add support. And also, Susie, I really think, and you know this as an educator, we really need to create with this day and age, anything is at a student's fingertips with their smartphones, on the internet. How do we create a meaningful, engaging, like relevant education? We cannot teach like we did back, you know, from the textbook how we used to do, not just because of the COVID and that interruption, but because anyone who's doing educational research knows. Where do you see these bright spots across the country, across the state? It's where students are so engaged and they're helping create what's meaningful for them. Mm-hmm. That's really important that we have. I call it a student-centered scheduling, flexibility, independent studies, job internships, shadows, senior projects, like things that really get, and CTE is a big thing, Chris, because that's not only on the governor's wish list, the new superintendent, Debbie Critchfield, I was on her transition team, as you probably know.
The state superintendent of public instruction, yeah.
Yep. She had put 50, on her budget, she's putting $50 million towards CTE. She wants to increase how much we support students to be able to have these hands-on. My last district, I was on the K-Tech, which is Kootenai Technical Education Campus. Just took a group of some focusing on the trades group here and some PAFE members, and we went down and toured, showed them K-Tech, and the excitement and inspiration to think, wow, if our students up here at North Idaho could have access to that kind of preparation and graduate ready to start in an industry ready mm-hmm. to go. So that's really coming mm-hmm. under student that you just said, improving mm-hmm. student connection. That is how we can improve student connection. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to your point about engagement, in fact, to the draft plan point of goal for improving academic engagement, if a kid's interested in something, they're gonna excel because it's natural to them. It's easy. It's fun, right? And that is the way you would lift up their student achievement. Yeah. So I want to circle back on address facilities that the others. The second, or actually the first listed in the strategic plan, because a big part of that, we talked about school safety. That's something that's now ever present, I think, for school districts, but also addressing the deficient building conditions. And it looks like there's not an immediate thing within 5 years. So like we're going to go out and, you know, replace the middle school or something, but rather it's a planning process. And I got to expect that's because we have to figure out how we're going to finance this.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, not funny. It's sad, actually, to me. You know, we're the last state in the entire country that to pass a bond to build new buildings, you have to have a supermajority, 67 and two-thirds vote. And there is no funds from the state to help build. Other states have one or the other, and some obviously have both. So it's very difficult to pass a bond in this state. It just is. Several legislators over the years, I've been in public education here for 30 years, and they've tried to pass, and it just needs to be a constitutional amendment, and it just hasn't happened yet. That being said, there are other ways to address needs that we have. You can see on this plan, really looking at what are our most deficient projects deficiencies that we have, and unsafe conditions. So looking at getting building condition evaluations done, they did ones in 2019, and really looking at the next, let's do that again, look at where it's at, and what are our priorities, and where is our growth then? In here, you can see that we're going to recommend a long-range facility planning committee. The board would sanction that, and then people in the community, all sorts of people in the community would be part of that group, and creating a 10-year. Now, I did do that in my last district with a 10-year long-range facility plan. So I'm familiar with how the process works and what we need to get ducks in a row to do. And that would be my first recommendation to the board, is that we start that, because we don't have time to spare for us to get on these right away.
Mm-hmm. Good words to say. I mean, it's very interesting conversation here, but I want the KRFY listeners to know this is the morning show. And we're speaking with Dr. Becky Meyer. She's a superintendent of the Lake Pend'Oreille School District. And we're looking at the strategic plan that really just came out, a five-year strategic plan. It's amazing. Great job, by the way. And let's continue with that.
It's a draft of the plan.
A draft of the plan.
So far.
Yeah.
I assume that means it needs to be approved by the board.
Yeah. And I guess I didn't finish the, when you're first initial, like, what did we do to get up to this process? Now it will go to the school board at the February 14th meeting as the first iteration. Hopefully they'll give feedback, questions, want me to do some follow-up, gather any more information for them. And I initially wanted to have them finalize it in April. We've moved that up, and if depending on the amount of questions they have and feedback they want, hopefully they would approve that in March, and we'd be ready to hit the ground running this summer to get ready.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we talked about the first two major goals that it articulates: address facilities and improve student connection. The third one is retain quality staff. And I got to say, that seems kind of obvious. We have to have good teachers. So how does the plan deal with that? Because especially because Idaho historically, we don't pay our teachers as much. So we're subject to, and good teachers, you know, going to other states where they might make quite a bit more, actually.
Right across the border, yes.
Yeah.
My sister is a school psychologist, and I tried to convince her to move here into Idaho. She would have taken a $22,000 pay cut just, you know, coming across. So it is rather interesting. But one thing that you said that's, I know it seems really obvious, but it is probably the most, research shows that it is the most important is the teacher, the quality of the teacher in the classroom. And you know that. And when we look at Hattie's work, the number one way for students where you can get the most effect of students growing and learning every day is for teacher's estimate of student achievement. That means, do I as a teacher feel like you can live up to the high expectations and meet the rigor that I have? So really students that are pushed by their teacher to push outside what they think they can do and grow and stretch academically. In my experience being here 23 years before, the one thing that I can always tell you about Lake Pend'Oreille School District, we're known for our teachers that think outside the box. One of the reasons PAFE was started, for really innovative grants. To remember back all those 20 years ago when PAFE started, it was like, let's reward these teachers that are thinking out of the box. How do we meet the needs of kids? How do we stretch kids and grow? That is.
I'll throw in that PAFE is Panhandle Alliance for Education. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I do have an acronym list if anyone's interested that we could download. I have them all written.
A lot of acronyms in your line of work in there. Go on. I jumped
one in. One thing I just really want to say, it seems obvious like compensation. And one of Governor Little's, his draft when he came out with his budget is to increase the base pay for teachers in Idaho to $47,000, which would take us out of the bottom and put us near, you know, near the above the middle. So that would be helpful for
now that has to make it through the legislature this year. So
It has to make it through the House, Ed, and the Senate. And so that depends how the legislators feel. But that is in his plan. I think it would be helpful, and it would reward what teachers do. Because they're very, if you look across the country, the teaching profession is not rewarded, I think, as much as it should be. But compensation and benefits really is not what came out. Addressing staff satisfaction, burnout, job satisfaction, it was very difficult for staff during the COVID. Online, in person, helping kids that had these gaps when parents, you know, maybe had to keep their kids home for medical reasons or one of their families was compromised. It really has been a rough couple of years for all of our educators, you know, everyone in our district. Yeah. And I feel like addressing that and building cohesion again, creating a staff wellness program is super important. We want to help support our teachers so that they can support the kids. And that's part of this retaining quality staffs, Chris.
So having really good substitutes so that the cohesion of the classroom remains if they need to take time off. But also number five on this list of retaining quality staff is providing robust and relevant professional development. I know if a teacher feels that they are on top of the educational ideas and things like that, they have more excitement and involvement in that process of educating children. So where does that live, and how did you come up with that?
That's a great point. One thing that came out in the surveys over and over again from staff that we noticed, they really want to be able to have some training and capacity building. Like, how do you connect with the students? How do we reach students, not only academically, but socially? How do we increase what I talked about earlier? Staff is really desiring the need. Like, how do we connect with these students and them to have some training about it? It is a different era than 5 years ago. We have significant increase in behaviors that we're seeing observed in the classroom. Significant difference in the attention span with students. There is just a different classroom environment than there was not only pre-COVID, but all of the computer and the technology, and again, instant, where we're having instant information. It's different than it was, and we have to, as educators, be flexible and be able to learn and adapt. How do we reach the kids and still teaching the things they need to learn to be successful graduates into our community.
Mm-hmm. One more thing under the retain quality staff goal here is one of the subpoints is maintain reasonable class sizes. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, when class sizes are smaller, kids tend to learn better because they have more interaction with their fellow students and the teacher. But what is a reasonable class size these days?
Yeah. It's ironic you asked that, Chris, because when I had these groups that met together, all the ones I listed earlier, that let's work on this and funnel it and make it more descriptive, the question I always put is, what's reasonable? Well, you know, what's reasonable? And for a first grade classroom where you're teaching reading, it's very small. There's exemplary numbers that they have for blue ribbon schools, 23 for kindergarten and first grade. I know, and even Susie's cringing, even less would be nice. But again, it comes down to what can we afford? What do we have as a budget? What do we have that the taxpayers are supporting in the indefinite term levy?
And mm-hmm. facilities to support that.
To support that. Exactly. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And really, it comes down to what can teachers do with the students they have in front of them? Do we have parapros? Do we have parent volunteers? How do we help reach the needs? And so Title I, what sort of staff is able so that it's not just the teacher in the classroom. We have so much support staff that helps break those numbers up into smaller, manageable pieces. Flexible grouping, win time. We have a lot of great teachers that use the resources and the staff they have. I will remind listeners, 87% of our budget is staffing. We are in the people business. Mm-hmm. So when you think about public education, yes, we need to address facilities and we have buses and we have other needs, but staffing is our major cost. So when you're thinking about taxpayer dollars, that's to be able to help those reasonable class sizes so that we can teach those kids reading and math and get excited about science and inquisitive curiosity, and then offer additional electives at the secondary level. You can only do that by having staff that is endorsed in that, able to teach it, and able to put those staff into that schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Just a real quick question on that one. I was thinking when you were talking about the partnership between home, parents, and the teacher when you're teaching young children to read. There are some really cool techniques. Even 10 minutes at home before bedtime can really like instill some of the things they learn during the day. So is there training for parents?
Funny you ask that, yeah. Because just last weekend on Saturday, I was at Farm and Stidwell, and they have Ready for Kindergarten. It's an amazing program. I went there and spent several hours. Amazing. PAFE did put that on, and so much attendance. It's amazing. We also have parent education programs. Our staff really likes to work with parents. And anything they can do at home to support, we're making connections with parents. You can see that on here is to increase the connections with parents. When it talks about communication, really, we want to increase. Parents on the committee said, let's increase communication from the teacher in the classroom to the parents, from the district to families, from the district to community. One thing that came out last night is we have a lot of new residents that have moved in. How do we as a district be able to share what we do, share our positive stories, share what we do as a district, really help inform new people? I'm going to start something, a coffee clatch. I did it when I was a Sandpoint High School principal and I had a coffee clatch every month. I'm going to start a coffee clatch where I invite new people living in the area to come meet, ask questions, do a tour of the school, something that so I can help increase awareness in our community of just really what our public schools do for our community. And the students that stay here, they're really, I mean, so many people move back here because it's such a great place to live. So this, any sort of investment in our education system is an investment in this community.
Mm-hmm. And that is actually the fourth major goal here in the draft of the new strategic plan. That's foster community connection. And you just actually spoke to that, you know, and trying to really get parents involved and connecting with people as they arrive here. Yeah.
I like your idea of a welcome wagon on the educational level. Right.
Mm-hmm. Frequent and effective communication from teachers to parents, district to families, district to community. You're already trying to get that going because you have a new newsletter you're doing now.
Yep. Yeah. It's an edublog. So it's an edublog, and we're doing once a month. We've started when I first got here. Thank you to PAFE, Panhandle Alliance for Education, for the grant. We have Kristen Hawkins as our community relations liaison. When I was hired, I said there's only one thing I really need to be successful, my own heart for this district, but more so than that, is we need to be able to share a positive story. Everyone in the district is so working very hard, and to add, you know, press and communication and getting the word out, it really takes a dedicated person to say, what can we do to show you what we're doing and involve the community? So, you know, shout out for that. We started an Instagram account. Facebook, it's linked to Facebook, so anything I post on Instagram will go to Facebook. We have this loop that we're doing every month that we're sharing out. If you want to sign up for that, go to our website. Even if you're not a parent, we can sign you up, and it'll automatically be sent to you every month. Mm-hmm. I
got mine last night.
Yeah, thank you. And I also, we're really working to put positive press and any sort of press, like giving out the transparency, just getting out what's happening in the schools. You've probably seen more articles in the Daily Bee. We're really working. We met with Caroline, and we really are working to try to make sure and share stories in there. We're going to have some editors being a guest opinion that we can put in there and really try to build connections. Mm-hmm. With the community, however we can.
And that's actually one specific point here, community partnerships. Partner with business and nonprofit organizations to support the district. Encourage and create opportunities for students to serve in local organizations. We like that idea right here.
Yeah, we
KRFY.
Would like some KRFY broadcasters from the high school. We're going to work on that.
Yeah, we'd love that. Yeah. And back to the relevancy, if we can get students out and they see what's going on. I mean, I have story after story after story that people have shared, not only through this building the 5-year strategic plan, but just from 30 years of doing, when you really see those kids out in the workplace connecting with what, oh, look at what this is. They're like, wow, that's not what I thought it was going to be. I don't want to do that. Or this is, my heart is singing. Like, this is exactly what I want to do. So for us to be able to build internships, Clark Fork's working on that right now, and then maybe their Fridays are going to be internships. It's going to be really interesting. One thing I'd like to also add in, Chris, we're looking at, when I earlier you said flexible scheduling is on this list. We are looking at we're going to send out a parent survey actually Friday. We've met with the staff, did a staff survey, talked to students. And one thing that we really are looking at is creating internships, job shadows, some different flexible scheduling, which would include that our Wednesday early release would be moved to a Friday early release. So we're looking at that possibility, but we're sending out a parent survey, and I'll be sending out to them this Friday. So that could be something that helps also if kids are out in the community on Fridays and connecting and doing this that you just talked about.
When you're talking about fostering community connections, you talk a lot about parents, but I just want to give a throw out to grandparents. We have a grandparent here in the studio right
yes,
now.
Yes, we do.
That
yeah.
has a granddaughter coming up that will be in the school district, I imagine.
Yeah.
And yeah, those grandparents have a lot of time, just so you probably know that. Yeah.
And if you've been a prior teacher, back to substitute teaching, we raised the rate this year to $130 a day. Regular substitutes are 90 or 100. I'm not sure on that. Don't quote me on that. But retired teachers, $130 a day, we have them at the highest because, back to what you said, having quality teachers, quality substitutes, that's always a real struggle. So if we can have teachers who are willing to come back and spend a day with kids, that allows, it's not just because, you know, teachers are sick. Sometimes it's professional development. Like, they need to learn something and there's a day for them to do that. And we can, you know, grade level teams. And so that would be wonderful if you want to come spend a day.
So that is the draft of the new 5-year strategic plan for the Lake Pondere School District. As you mentioned, it's available to folks. If they received the Loop newsletter, they would have got that yesterday. They can go to the website, they can click on the Loop, and it's the very first thing there. You can download that document and have a look at it for yourself. And I thought, why don't we take a little musical break here and let Dr. Becky
breathe a little?
Yeah, catch your breath here. And we'll come back and talk about a couple other things. But we do have Graham Nash coming to town. We have him queued up?
So we have Graham Nash, Stephen Stills, David Crosby, and Neil Young. This is Teach Your Children. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, Teach Your Children. We're back here in the studios of 88.5 KRFY, your community radio station. I'm Susie Prez with Chris Bessler and Dr. Becky Meyer. Lake Pend'Oreille School District Superintendent.
And we've been talking about the new strategic plan, but of course there are other things going on in the schools. And one of them that's coming up is a career and college fair, and that's happening Tuesday, March 14th. So that's a few weeks off yet. But tell us more about what that's about.
Well, Geralyn Meyer, she's put that together, and Angie Dale at Sandpoint High School, and really having opening up the opportunities like we were talking about earlier. If kids can actually open the door and see different ideas, what are things in our community they're offered? The prior superintendent, Tom Albertson, he had written a PAFE grant, and they did industry videos. So it just finished about 19, 20 of those where they're showing them in the bulletins. Staff video bulletins is what they do at the secondary level. And really having kids be able to look at, oh, I didn't know this is something we have. They had Coachava, Schweitzer, some construction companies, all sorts of places, banks, all sorts of places and businesses throughout the community. There's Will Clark is a student at do you know him?
Well, he's a broadcaster here at KRFY. Yeah, he does the CP at 3 on Thursday. That's a Cedar Post. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Will Clark, he loves to talk. And when you're talking about industry and places in our community, businesses, what's cooler than a community radio station? Yeah. We got to get some kids up here and do a video
we
of this.
We have to think it's cool.
Well, it is cool.
It is
cool. Oh, my gosh. We play and Will plays great music, too. Anyway, sorry.
No, so that's great. Just opening up the doors for and the brain and opening it, let students know what's available. Let's increase awareness and have their eyes open.
Mm-hmm. And businesses can still sign up for that.
Yep. And just reach out to Sandpoint High School, 263-3034. I still remember that number.
Okay. I'm taking a look at what went out in The Loop last night, your newsletter. One of the things that you talk about there is the resource closet. And so what a resource closet and how does that benefit people?
It's housed at Farmingstead Well Elementary, and Betsy DeLessio, the principal there, she was in charge. She still is in charge of the homeless, which is a McKinney-Vento Act from the federal government. And there's oftentimes that students don't have necessities that they need, coats, boots, hats, food, things that we need. And there's donations from the community, and then she also has a very small portion from the federal government for the homeless act. And then she has it stocked, if you can see the pictures.
Yeah.
She's super organized, and she has it very, well organized, and people make requests throughout the district, and then she fulfills those, sends them, and then the students have what they need. Also, a shout-out to Food for Our Children. They have done a ton for us. Amazing. Dennis Pence and his group have donated a lot of funds. They send food home, non-perishable, and they send it home with kids on Friday so that they have food. Some students only eat while they're at school, so they do a great, great service for our community. They just had a huge fundraiser. They also donated recently for students. When we were in the COVID, the federal government had free breakfast and lunch for all students. You probably remember that. Well, it just went out this year, so it's been a huge adjustment. Our free and reduced rate is not the same as it used to be. The federal government really needs to look at changing that threshold because the cost of living in communities, especially Sandpoint, for the you were just talking about affording eggs earlier before we went on the air, and milk and rent. It's really a lot to live here, and the free and reduced to qualify for free or reduced lunch. They have not increased that threshold, so less people have been approved for that, and we need it more. And the Food for Our Children has donated $50,000 towards that to help those families that are right there on the cusp. So huge thank you to them as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And every Wednesday or something, there's a group of people that get together and load up those backpacks for the kids to take home on Friday.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, volunteers, 100% of that money that you donate to Food for Our Children, 100% goes to the program. There's no administration costs.
Fantastic.
In the resource closet, you accept donations for that. So if people, I assume things need to be in really good shape for that. But if people have things that they would like to donate to that, you could get more information about that in The Loop and see how to connect up for that. We're down to just a few more minutes. Are there some things that you'd like to bring up?
Oh, well, just get involved, I guess, to the community. If you're new to the area, look out for finding a time to have a coffee clutch with me, be able to connect and learn about the district. If you're a grandparent, if you have time on your hand or you just want to be involved in the schools, we have little reading bunnies that we would love to be able to have people sit down. We have a therapy dog that's at Farmstead Well, Pepper, reading with Pepper. Well, reading with a grandparent and helping students, that's just, you can't think of anything better to do. Also, just a shout out, I really would like people to think, as we're thinking long term, I think it'll come out in the Long Range Facility Planning Committee, but one of my big ideas, we have the big idea with PAFE on the residential carpentry program that was started. We talked about that last time I was on the air with you, Chris. But thinking of this K-Tech idea and taking that group down and looking, if we could create something in our community for kids to get certified industry ready, CNA, going to be medical field, looking at computers, looking at millwrights, construction workers,
how about welding,
yeah. aerospace. Yes, I talked to Dyer. Welding, automotive, diesel mechanics. There's so much that we can really wrap our heads that students can stay right here in our community, be trained and ready to go, and support our community. It's really a great dream, I think, that we have, and people that want to really be student-focused. It's coming up, and I just want people to start thinking about how that could look in our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds really good. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was just going to say, Dr. Becky Meyer, thanks for coming in to talk to us about what's going on with the schools, and we're going to want you to come back again probably towards the end of the school year, maybe after the school year is over, and we'll size it all up, how it went.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. That's what I was trying to say is I think that we should do this kind of talk a little bit more. This is so exciting. Congratulations for coming back to the school district and bringing your enthusiasm and making this a vibrant community through the educational process.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me.